Sometimes I'll write content that people do not agree with, like, at all. Because I just figured, like, oh, because I'm the boss, everyone's going to listen to me. That's just, like, not how that works.
Dude, you're so wrong here.
I would even get, like, a couple dozen comments. Like, dude, your content is terrible.
It's terrible, but there's nothing else out there.
Fast forward a year later, the bottleneck has, like, about 28,000 subscribers.
Those are very good numbers. You're going pretty slow, and then you kind of rock it up. Let's talk, like, the business side of things for a second, the revenue.
I'm getting about 30K in MRR, or monthly revenue. It's going to be in a couple hundreds of thousands. It's, like, where we could go.
That's ambitious. Do you identify with that term, creator?
No.
Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. Our guest today is Ramil Sheikh, creator of The Bottleneck, a newsletter for chief operating officers and managers covering BizOps, HR, finance, everything about managing and scaling a business. Ramil, your LinkedIn bio, which is kind of like a pitch for The Bottleneck, says, "You want to be better at your job. I want to meet great operators." And I found that really interesting. It's this very like open-armed statement to potential subscribers. Like you're saying, like, I want you to sign up. Like, I'm interested in you. What is your relationship with your audience?
Great question. So first of all, just happy to be here, right?
Yes,
really glad
welcome.
To celebrate that first year. And even starting off with the idea of like connecting with every single subscriber that I can. I'm sure this is probably cliche and everyone else says this, but in my welcome series, anyone who responds, I immediately respond back. Mm-hmm. So I have a couple hundred messages actually to respond back to after this call anyway.
Yeah, that is such a thing. Like I chip away at it every day, but I'm always like at least a few days behind. Yeah. So the makeup of your audience too, actually, I feel like this is something you track pretty well. You've got pretty good data on it. It's like 90% COOs or something I read. Tell me about who these people are.
For sure. So I write for early stage chief operating officers, so COOs, operation execs. You can think of ops execs like a head of people, head of finance, a VP of strategy, as well as senior program managers, biz ops folks. Frankly, it's like going after the business area that no one really targets, right? Everyone targets
back
engineers of
house,
the world.
Saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Everyone targets the engineers, marketers, sales folks, but no one really goes after the positions that like I've used to work with in the past.
Yeah. Okay. I want to step way back for a second. We'll get back to the newsletter, but I want to get into like your background and how you get here. So looking at your LinkedIn, right out of college, you work at Uber Freight for a few years, which I actually didn't even know they had this. But that to me kind of was, okay, this is like the first, you know, piece of the puzzle in how you get to like writing for COOs, because that's all about logistics and shipping and, you know, that kind of thing. To me too, like being a CEO, working logistics, all this kind of stuff really ladders well into being a creator, where it is like you're an entrepreneur. You have to like manage all these things. So you don't have to tell me everything about like what you did at Uber Freight for those 3 years, but I am curious if there are any like particular lessons and ways of working that you took from that, that are still important to how you operate.
Yeah, 100%. So when I joined Uber Freight, I actually joined in as a salesperson or as an account manager, because I just didn't know what I wanted to do. I had interned with like the VC, like VCs of the world for two summers, hated it. It's like, that's not the way I want to go. Wanted to be an operator. So when I jumped into sales, very quickly I moved over to program management, where the role was so vague because we were a startup within Uber, the startup. And that was when Uber was going through its like crisis mode. It was like 2017, 2018, when like there was a switch of CEOs. There was
famously.
Exactly right. There was a lack of investment in like certain areas. The 1 year professional had to figure out a lot of different issues. So a perfect example here is, we randomly created a new team, which is like how I got that program manager role.
Nice.
And within my first like month, I recognized a billing issue that was affecting 3% of all like top line revenue. The business now is like, I think like $3 or $4 billion. So just like even reflecting on like what a potential top line revenue, if like people just were to ignore it, it's like kind of an impact.
Yeah.
At least with ways of working, it just was more of the idea of like, you had to be always taking initiative. You always had to be jumping in. And like, we had this cultural value of acting like an owner, right? Like you had to act like it's your own business. And I think I've just like taken that mentality everywhere else I've gone, whether in my own businesses or working for others.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so after leaving, you've just kind of been on a founder mode tear, let's say. You did work somewhere for a couple of years. But before that, so after leaving Uber, you spent 1 year each on two businesses, which were kind of like, one was a fuel wholesaler and the other was like a clothing exporter. And you did want each one for just about a year. I'm curious what you learned from starting and then having to stop these two businesses in terms of like running a business and operating.
For sure. So started the very first business. It was pure chaos because I quit my job in February 2020. Everyone knows COVID started March 2020. It turns out, like, lucky break for me, but like unlucky for a lot of my competitors, where like I was one of the like few businesses in town still operating. So we were able to grow that pretty quickly and like exit within the first year. Just because we were reaching that scale, where we were signing like these like annual or decade line contracts, I not only had to learn like very quickly, like anything when it comes to legal compliance, I had to figure out like, okay, how do I hire a sales team, especially in a world going from like physical to virtual, especially in like a bootstrap old school like business. As well as being able to manage a lot of different egos, I think was actually like one of the bigger like things I had to learn as a founder, because I just figured like, oh, because I'm the boss, everyone's going to listen to me. That's just like not how that worked. It was more like, dude, I have like 20 years of seniority over you. Like, you listen to me, even like, though I'm kind of check. So like learning to manage up and down while also like understanding the nitty gritty of like these old school businesses, whether it was like this wholesaler fuel logistics business that like I was able to exit, or the second one, which was like the secondhand apparel. Again, old school business. Was like, okay, I can bootstrap this. Let's
Oh, you exited the first one though.
Yeah, I exited both of them.
Oh, awesome. Amazing. Okay, so going from there, after those startups, you go to this, you move to New York and you join this company FirstSpace, which is relevant to the newsletter because that's where you then like, I guess at the startups you were like de facto COO, but here you actually hold that title for the first time. So we don't need to get into like everything you did there, but like you leave FirstSpace to move back to Texas because you and your wife are going to have a baby and you want to be closer to family. Why do you decide to do a newsletter instead of finding some remote job or looking for a job in Houston?
So it's kind of funny. When I found out that my wife was pregnant, I had a very interesting conversation with my CEO where basically I decided to move back home to Houston. I myself had helped develop an in-office environment where we had convinced people from around, like, not even America, the world, to move to New York. I have about 100 family members in a 15-minute driving radius in Houston. So I wanted to raise my daughter in that environment. So I pretty abruptly quit with, like, no job prospect, like, nothing, having just moved back in October of 2023. I sent out a tweet, and I had, like, 200, 300 followers. I don't even know why I did this, just, like, reflecting back on this. But I sent out a tweet basically detailing like, hey, I quit my job. I have like a baby on the way. Like I gave up this like much equity, and it went viral, at least for me. So going from like a couple hundred followers, I think I had about 110, 120,000 people see it. So
did people actually like follow you then too?
So people started following, people started DMing me because I guess they saw my experience on LinkedIn or like, I guess what I had talked about. So a lot of like job offers like came in, right? Or like a lot of like consulting offers came in. But there were two things that like were holding me back. One was the idea that I come from like a family of entrepreneurs. So my dad has always owned like gas stations and businesses, like all my uncles and aunts, like of the 100 family member. People like no one has a job. Like everyone has their own business. I was the only guy who got like a job.
They're like, what are you doing, dude?
Truly. Like, I remember I was like, when I first got my Uber job, I was getting so much pressure from everyone saying like, you're wasting your time. Like, please like quit your job. It was basically a very abnormal experience, I think, compared to like most people. So there was that, of course, in the back of my head. Like, I knew I wanted to get back into like running a business again. But then the second part is like, I'm going to look for another opportunity. And whatever great opportunity comes in, that's when I'll jump aboard. So let me write for now. And just basically like I just started writing about like either my own experiences or what I thought I wish would have existed when I was a CEO or like early in my operational career. And fast forward a year later, the bottleneck has like about 28,000 subscribers, and we're just still growing and chugging along.
Which is amazing. So I found your stats on Passion Fruit. So it sounds like this is up to date. 28,000 subscribers with a 56.1% open rate, 3% click rate. Those are very good numbers.
I appreciate it. Yeah, man. I'm happy to hear. It's not even for me, like the subscriber count that's super interesting. It's always the engagement.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm happy to hear.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. And dude, I need to actually update that. It's at 60% now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So like to me, like what I always optimize for is more of the idea of even if it's open rates or click through rates, but like thoughtful responses that come in. Right.
Yeah.
So if people are like interacting with me in some way through the newsletter or through socials or however they may find me.
So
I think that's
you were saying like there's good replies. Sorry to interrupt. You're saying there's good replies to the welcome email, but now you're saying too like people are often replying to any given issue you're sending out as well.
For sure, right? Because like how I always like to think of the email, and we can talk about the structure of the content if you want to get into it. But
we'll get into that later.
Okay, cool. So just super high level. Like sometimes I'll write content that people do not agree with, like at all, right? They're like, hey, you should never do this with an employee, or you shouldn't do this, or like whatever it may be. And like, that's a conversation that I do want to have because either I'm learning something new or I'm going to educate someone.
Yeah.
But the other piece here is sometimes people just think like it's funny, like whatever I've written, because I do try to add in a little bit of humor once in a while. So like there's just like either funny, thoughtful responses or just like inbound comments.
Yeah. What's been the most like controversial, like people have disagreed with the most, or like, I don't know, one or two posts that people have just been like, dude, you're so wrong here.
Oh, that's a great question. Okay. So something that like, I was shocked how many people like came in inbound, and like, I don't know how in the weeds we want to get, but based around idea of like a PIP, which is like a performance improvement plan. Mm-hmm. So what that just simply means usually is, hey, you have an employee, like they're not performing well. You want to like give them a heads up, they're not performing well. And then over a certain amount of time, you either have them stay because they met their metrics or you let them go.
Yeah.
For most managers, there's like a game that they play with PIPs, which is that they will put like an underachieving employee or an employee they don't like on a PIP plan. And then because under the guise of like, oh yeah, I put you under a PIP and you know you're underperforming, now it's like an easier conversation to have 30 days later.
Yeah, right? That's like, hey, I think of it as like a cynical, like, all right, like this is kind of your soft severance package that might not include a severance package at the end.
100%. And like, I think this might be okay with like corporate land when you have like 5,000 employees, but like for the folks who are reading my like newsletter or more earlier stage, they can't afford like one to like think through a PIP plan.
You have to make a
decision.
Then
put on someone in 30 days. Exactly. Yeah. You gotta run and you gotta go. So of course I do have like later stage companies read the newsletter and they came in hot. They're like, dude, you do not treat people like that. You can't say like there's no need for a PIP plan, versus my comment more was like, you need to continuously provide feedback to people where they should always know where they are in their performance.
By the time you do a PIP, it's too late.
Exactly. So like, I remember I got a couple like 100 responses based off of that, good and bad. I was like, oh, okay, like this is something I need to think through a little bit more.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, we should, I guess, talk about the structure of the newsletter a little bit. So I would use the word efficient for how you do it. It's very like, some of what you write is more long form. Some of it's really short. So I'll give like a little summary. You can correct me if any of this is wrong. So you sent the first issue, according to the archive I have here, on September 5th, 2023. And you started sending out just once a week. And the concept was the ops playbook. And so it's these really short, like 500 word pieces about concepts like how to plan your OKRs, how to avoid a bad hire, crisis communication, stuff like that, with links out to deeper context. And then a few months later, you introduced the second series, which is a self-explanatory case study series where you look at different companies and take a look at kind of their ops. You start upping the pace of publishing, multiple times a week. By now, we're, I don't know, like 390 days later or so. And you've published 260 editions, which is a lot. And then there's one more. You start doing interviews as well. So I think those are like kind of the three series, and you post a lot. So tell me, expand on like, the structure of the newsletter and like these different content series.
For sure. Yeah. I think that was a great like general overview. So going to it a little bit more with the Thursday editions, which are like the ops playbooks that you have. Mm-hmm. At least current state, what it is we have like a general topic, right? So it could be around like management, HR, finance, strategy. And then we get into like three different tips around like 300 to 500 words each. Either that's based off my own experiences, but of course, you know, like there's only so much experience that I have. So I also, working with a team, research like from different links or from different sources. One thing I think I do a little bit different that most people don't do for some reason is like I always backlink to wherever I found the resource like immediately. So like I have a title and then like insight from Billy, right? Whoever that may be.
Builds trust.
Exactly, right? Because I don't want to portray myself as a person who's experienced like these thousands of things and then someone come inbound versus me saying like, hey, I'm not only backlinked to this individual who I think is an expert in this topic, but let me at least summarize the content. If you ever want to go read, okay, cool. Click the link and go, right? So that's like the Thursday edition there. Always around like 1200 words or less, right? So like can be pretty dense, but it can be a quick read for a lot of our operators who are like too...
strapped for time.
Too strapped for time, exactly. Yeah. So then for Sundays, like what you mentioned was like the case studies. I think what we do is we try to focus, and I've experimented with this a lot, just to be quite frank with you. Yeah. But what we're settling on is this idea of like having a case study where it's around one operational tactic that a company used to scale their business, right? Mm-hmm. So we really hyper focus on like what one thing someone is doing. An example here is like, why would Superhuman onboard every customer manually, even though they're charging like, I think $30 a month, right? Yeah. Like intuitively, you think they wouldn't want to do that. Why is that? We get into the why, but then we also say like, how can you do this? Yeah. Right? Because I don't think it's really valuable to hear a narrative unless you also know how to apply it to your business yourself. I don't want you to
chew on it a little bit for the reader.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But if I can just tell you like, hey, this is how I think you could do it. Like obviously I try to keep it as general as possible, but like, let's get into like a little bit of a playbook. I think you'll provide value. And again, if you disagree, like feel free to like edit however you think makes sense or just respond back to the email and I'll try to work with you.
Wait, so I'm curious more what about the experimentation you've done to like get that to that version. It sounds like maybe you've tried like more broadly looking at an entire company, maybe not doing kind of the like takeaway. Yeah. What have you learned from experimenting on this?
For sure. So, and I'm continually experimenting. So at first, So at first it was funny. So like at first I did, which was like the case study, one ops tactics, sticking super closely to it. The idea of like, hey, here's an intro context, like how to do the thing. Cool. Bye. Then I tried doing a little bit more longer form, like thought PC stuff. People hated it. They were just like, dude, like, this is not why I'm here. Like I'm here for like actionable insights on like how to do X, Y, or Z. And I was like, okay, I hear you loud and clear. Like not going to do that unless like something I think is just super interesting. And even if it's like a philosophical thought piece, this is the future of AI like type vibe. I always try to add in like, hey, these are at least key takeaways or something that you can do to apply to your business.
Yeah.
I think like that core component of like what you can do for your own business is the huge value add or the unlock for like my readers.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And then more recently you started doing the interviews and guest posts even, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think these are two different things, but like both inspired by Lenny, right? So I think Lenny has done a fantastic job like creating content for product managers.
Arguably like kind of the best like business niche newsletter out there.
100%. Like he's the OG. Like I think every newsletter writer or content creator in the business world like looks up to him or draws inspiration from some way.
Yeah. Of these series, is there one that you like working on most and then one that is like a clear, like it sounds like your readers like the ops playbooks the most because they're just such like quick bites, but I'm getting the impression that the case studies are maybe more your favorite to work on.
So that's a great question. So it's interesting, like if you were to look at the numbers, like when it comes to open rates, engagements, like thoughtful responses, the case studies are what the audience responds to. But whenever I've talked to, because I survey my readers all the time, I like again, like I'm like jumping on calls with folks all the time, people always mention the ops playbook. So it is interesting, my brain, where it's like I can see the actions that people are taking. For me, at least, it seems like case studies. But then when I ask people like, hey, like what about the bottleneck do you like, they're like, oh yeah, quick tips, give me the quick tips. So like I won. And then for me personally speaking, like I enjoy the case studies. Like I think that's just like where my brain works, where like let me break it down.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So like I don't know, I don't know what's going on. Like, just to be very transparent, like, I'm trying to figure it out myself. Yeah. Like, I don't want to like just make up an answer here. Mm-hmm. But it seems like people seem to interact with the case studies more, but the ops tips are just more memorable.
Yeah. Let's talk like the business side of things for a second, the revenue. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to get into like exact dollar amounts, but you know, at least ballparks to give the listeners an idea of what's going on here. So as far as I know, you sell ads. I don't believe you currently have a paid version, but you might have in the past. Is this a business that is sustaining you at this point, a year in?
Yeah. So we can break up the business into three parts, and I can get into like rough numbers. So
please.
I guess like the highlight is like I'm getting about, at least as of the past 2 months, about 30K in MRR. Damn. So our monthly revenue.
Yeah.
And how is that broken
very
down?
Very good.
Yeah, it's like solid. Yeah, it's been good. It's good. It's good.
For a newsletter with 28,000 subscribers. Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. Man. And we'll get into the monetization. Yeah. Like, I don't mind jumping into it. So with the newsletter, of course, is with like the ads that we run. We also, what I do is I have like a consulting like type situation or coach. It can be coaching or consulting depending on the level of involvement that people want. So I have a few clients there. But then I also run a membership called Cornerstone, right? So that is, if familiar with like YPO, with Hampton, those are for founders,
Hampton
CEOs.
Chief.
Yeah. Exactly, Chief. So like I run
exclusive,
something
vetted, a little bit. Community, high ticket, entry fee, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I run something very similar for COOs or like ops execs, right? So like just a combination of like all those three businesses are like what drive that like 30K MRR.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think Cornerstone, you formally launched it this summer. How long? So I don't know if you've replaced like maybe let's say your salary at First Base, let's say. But if you have, how long did it take you to get there?
So I replaced my base.
Your base.
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good question. Let me like think about this. It sounds so weird to say that out loud, but like, yeah, I guess it took till July. So like I started like in October. So like 7-8 months, 9 months,
that's,
whatever.
I mean,
that
that's not really bad for like bootstrapping a newsletter based business.
Dude, when you have a baby, you're so prioritized and focused on everything. Like you have like 7 hours to spend, 6 hours to spend. Like you don't have time to do anything else. So like in my brain is like, okay, make money, or provide great content, or like, okay, let me grow, or like whatever the thing for the, whatever the flavor of the day is.
The key word there is provide for your family.
Exactly. Yeah, man. Like I like to think I'm like relatively family oriented while also ambitious. So like just combining both things has been an interesting experience.
Doing the newsletter, kind of like, I mean, working from home, having this thing that being your own boss, content is kind of seems perfect for that. Looking again at your passion fruit, you have four different ad offerings ranging in price from $1,200 for like one ad in kind of the Thursday sends, I think, to $3,000 for an ad, I believe, in the Sunday case studies sends. How are ad sales doing? Are you selling out? And then also, how do you price those?
Yeah, so I priced those on a CPM basis. Like, I wish there was a more scientific way to do, like, I would have done it. But it's honestly looking around to see what competitors are doing based off it's either based off what competitors are doing, what I'm just hearing from, like, different partners that I'm, like, working with or interacting with. When it comes to ad sales, like, a lot of it has been a combination of inbound and outbound. It hasn't been insanely difficult, right, to get partners, I think, of two reasons. One is because like the audience that I have, it's pretty clear, right? And I can provide the numbers, the stats. I track everything that I track, like who my audience is. And I can get into that, like how I'm tracking audience stuff if you want. But I think that is an immediate sell, right? Like decision makers, ops execs, but also like it's clear who the partners would be as well, right? Like the B2B SaaSes and agencies of the world, like I think would love to work with this audience versus some other newsletters, which might be more general in nature.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously that makes sense. You've got this like very high value audience that you track really well. How are you tracking them? How are you backing this up?
For sure. Great question. So, two things. One is, in my welcome email sequence, I have, of course, like just the hi, hello, what's up. But then 30 seconds later, I send over basically like a gift. In that gift, it's actually like a Myers-Briggs like personality quiz, like for ops folks. So within that,
so BuzzFeed of you,
Yeah, I know, right? Like when I did it, I even like say within the email, like in the PS, just saying like, hey, I know this is cringe. Yeah. I know this is super cringe, but I know this is also really fun. Go do it. Mm-hmm. And you can see people really love that PS and they just like click into it. So with that, like we have a couple thousand people who of course want to do like this very unique quiz. And mm-hmm. one of the questions I do ask is around like what their role is, right? And most people who are signing up are signing up with their work emails as well. So like yeah. I'm able to like at least like go match and make sure like, hey, like are they actually saying who they are? Yeah. Another piece here is, of course, I do have the emails. Surprisingly, a lot of my email subscribers are using their work emails to sign up. So using tools such as like Clay or other data enrichment tools, I'm able to figure out like, hey, what position is an individual? Like, where are they at? Who are they? Mm-hmm. As well as Beehive, I think, does a great job, not from a position point of view, but location wise. So I'm able to see that like about, I think last I checked, it was like 85 to 90% of people like live in either US or Canada.
Yeah.
Right. So like, I think this is like that combination has been really good for like advertising sales.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's talk about actually building this audience. So one observation I'll start with is you have this great post reflecting on your first year of running it, and that you share an audience growth graph. And it's basically like the first kind of 2 or 3 months, you're going pretty slow. And then you kind of rock it up to 21,000. And then you're kind of stuck at 21,000 or so for about 6 months. So I guess let's talk to me about like before you get to the plateau, how do you, because I think so many people think you like need a big social media following to grow a newsletter audience. Not necessarily true. Maybe it's paid ads. Anyways, I'm saying too much. How did you get to like that first 21,000?
Yeah. So for the first 21,000, it was a little bit of a struggle. So like how I did it, which I don't know how replicable this is, but yeah. when I first started out, like I said, I had that tweet that went viral, right? Like, okay, mm-hmm. let me go like start writing online, realize like, oh, this potentially could be a business. Just looking up like different resources, like how did people grow in the past? It seemed like a lot of people were running paid ads, right? Mm-hmm. As well as like different organic channels. So like I did decide to do three different things. One is like, okay, let me take on a few consulting jobs, use that money to then funnel into paid ads.
There you go.
But then while I was running through paid ads, making sure the newsletter would have like a payback period within like a month. So like whatever that meant, whether it's ads, affiliates, or anything else. Just so like I could like cycle through the money like as quick as possible.
And just
the other piece, exactly. Yeah. But then the other piece besides paid ads was like this organic piece. I think what was happening was no one else writes to COOs, no one writes to biz ops folks. So whenever I wrote into any kind of communities, just saying like, hey, I've like written this thing, or like I'm interested in talking to other like operators to see what topics they would want to like learn about. Yeah. What I was finding is like a lot of like enthusiasm for the topics, or like at least the newsletter itself. I would even get like, I would usually even get like a couple of dozen comments like in the beginning, like, dude, your content is terrible. Like, this is so bad, but I'm subscribing because I identify like with this group of people that you're writing for. So like,
it's terrible, but there's nothing else out there.
Exactly. Right. So it's like, okay, the desert's there. Like I can maybe quench your thirst, but like I don't promise anything. And most people are like, okay, cool. Like, let's just check it out. It's free. Why not? So like that was a combination of the first like 21,000 people of like me just like hustling, reaching out to people I knew or like communities I knew that existed.
Had you done paid advertising before, like at your old jobs, at your old companies?
Yeah. So at First Base, I was like, we didn't really get into like the roles I had, but basically I owned like everything at some point. So I learned pretty quickly how to run paid ads. So like I had a couple $100,000 budget that like I was just like managing.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. So then the 21,000 plateau, you're there for a while. I don't know if you're still trying things, but you do say again in this 1 year reflection post that like kind of the way you finally broke out of that was that you started running these guest posts. You kind of tweaked the way you were doing paid ads, and then you revamped your subscriber onboarding and added that quiz. So yeah, tell me more about breaking out of, because it's like literally like 6 months and you were kind of dipping, losing subscribers as one does, and 6 months or so stuck there. Tell me about breaking out of that.
For sure. So just on a personal level, I got in a funk, right? Yeah. So I did not expect the growth that I did within the first month. So like you have to understand the timeline of like, let's say I go from like COO, someone who's always in the background, like not really looking for the spotlight in any way, to now, okay, I'm writing to an audience of like 21,000 people, not expecting like this to become an actual business. Like, again, the original intent was like, I'm just going to write online until I find the thing.
Yeah.
So in the back of my head, actually, even until I got to the 21,000 people, I was like, oh, this is a side project. Like, this is just the middle gap until I find the next thing.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm consulting. So, this is for fun. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, I just had a baby in January, you know, like I'm just doing this to pay bills until like the thing happens, like the next thing happens. Right.
Yeah.
But then as we were growing, I like hit that funk, I think in March. I was like, dude, like, you know, what am I doing? Like, I'm not sure if like this is the right move for me from like a professional or even like from a personal level. Like, where do I go with this? And I think you can even see potentially in the quality of writing, it's like it kind of stagnates a little bit where it's like, okay, it's clear like he's trying to figure out what he wants to do. As well as like with the paid offerings, right? So Cornerstone hadn't been released yet. I was still like doing these consulting things on the side. So trying to figure out how to do ad sales because I didn't even know how to do that yet, right? Like, I was like learning all of this at the same time. Create content, distribute. I mean, like literally I was like a child trying to learn how to run, and like I had the great support of the audience. I had like everything there, just like me trying to figure out the puzzle pieces in my head. So then going like through this process, I think some folks who were like just super helpful were already experienced newsletter operators, right? Either who had started around a similar time period as me, and had just like grown just as fast or even faster, as well as people who had already exited like their newsletter like operations, as well as like frankly like some startup people as well. Because like I think in the back of my head I had this image of like, yeah, like I come from startup land, and like is being a newsletter writer really like the most like cool thing for me to do right now? Like, I guess that was like also like something in my head, but like most people basically like verbally smacked me saying like, dude, you're so dumb. Like, this is like such a valuable thing. Like, you're killing, you're doing great. So while through this malaise, I was like, okay, let me like figure out how to work with like guest writers who like I just really like. So I brought in a few people to guest post on Sunday editions to see like what that would look like. Audience loved it. They're like, yeah, like we're not here necessarily for you, Ramil. We're here to learn, like whatever that may be, which is like also kind of like an awakening in me, like in a great way. Where I was like, oh, okay, so like if I collect like a lot of talented writing and post it under like the Bottleneck brand, it doesn't always have to be me. And that can at least like unlock like a little bit of the funk in my head. It's like, okay, it doesn't always have to be me doing this thing.
Well, so actually I want to talk about this for a second, because this is like you've been saying, you've been, this is your first time being like a content creator, or like just working in content at all. Do you identify with that term creator?
No. So like, that's super funny, right? Like I don't think of myself as a content creator. I think of myself as a founder, right? Mm-hmm. And frankly speaking, like maybe this is like not a good thing to say, but like word or titles don't really matter, I think, right? Yeah. Like who cares about titles, whatever they may be?
Well, I agree with you. Sorry to interrupt. I agree with you, because like I think about what does the word creator mean a lot. I've written about it a lot in the newsletter. I think, like, on one level, it's somebody who is, it's just somebody who's creating content for distribution on the internet to an audience beyond people they know in real life, beyond friends. So it's like not posting to your Instagram, that's just friends and family. You're trying to reach people beyond that. But then I think more, a sharper point on that is it's like, it's a labor condition, right? Where it's like, you're just working for yourself. You're kind of working for these tech companies. If you're on Instagram or you're on YouTube, they're taking ad revenue, et cetera. But all that being said, like if you're actually taking it seriously, you are a founder. You're a media startup, right? So like anybody who is, most people who, let's say, most people who are really like succeeding as a creator are a founder. They just might not use that word. But I guess, so 1 year of doing it, you're a founder, you're creating content, and that's the business now. Is there anything you like particularly like or dislike about it compared to like other times you've been a founder?
One thing, I'll go one dislike, one like. So yeah, let's go, perfect. Let's start negative and then end positive.
Yeah.
So one dislike has been because I previously in my other role as a CEO, like helped develop an in-office culture because I like in-office work.
Yeah. Actually. Okay.
So now I am, of course, like remote, like working with like teammates who are like all over the world. And like, it's not even a massive team, right? It's a very small team. I actually enjoy big teams.
Yeah.
I enjoy like being in the office, like doing like whatever hours, like
you like the trenches.
I like the trenches. Like, I'm just built for it. Like, throw me in, and like, yeah. I'm the one guy like smiling while everyone else is probably crying. So like, there's like that where it's like, I've had to adjust my brain a little bit. Right. Uh-huh. So the one part that I do like, of course, is like, I guess an inverse, because I am like now always virtual, right? There's no in-person component here. And because like my stakeholders, if you will, right, or either my subscribers or like my advertisers, whoever, they're all virtual. I'm never really on call. I actually can spend way more time with my family, which like, frankly speaking, I would not have been able to if I was like up in New York, or even my two other businesses that I had, which require like physical labor, me going door to door, like just like, you know, like dealing with old school like businesses.
Yeah.
So like, it's like a give or take on like the like or dislike. But it's been an interesting thing, which I think also contributed a little bit to the malaise like that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Okay. So that's interesting because you're talking about like the being in person versus, you know, being at home. What about just like the fact that like the product you're dealing in now is content compared to like moving, I don't know, like wholesale fuel sales, right? Like working with, besides like the remote versus in-person aspect, like this as a product.
For sure. So to me, like that, I enjoy what I'm doing now way more, like frankly speaking, right? Because I think of two reasons. One is like, I have the creative license to go any direction I want very quickly, which is a good and bad thing for me. We can even get into that, why that's a good and bad thing for me. But besides the creative licensing, I like realized about myself over the past like year and a half is that I enjoy like teaching people in some way, one or the other. And because my newsletter is around the education of how to do a certain process, a certain like department, like scheduling or leveling, I get to interact with so many different people at all kinds of levels, all kinds of industries, that if I can help even one person, like 10x their like skill set, like I feel good, like going to bed at night versus when I was like slinging oil and gas or like secondhand, like thrift apparel, or even doing B2B SaaS, like you're not really changing someone's world, right? Like you might be changing the world, but like in a negative way. Maybe possibly, I don't know. But it's like, it's like you're not doing the best thing versus like now, like I feel great like telling my friends, family thing, like whoever, like, hey, I'm helping someone in an awesome way.
That's really cool. I like that. Okay. So you were talking about other people, like your kind of your team. I don't know if it's like just you and then maybe you have contractors. But yeah. What does it look like to make the bottleneck? Who all is working on this with you?
For sure. So with the bottleneck, for the first couple of months, it was just me. Just like writing, distributing, figuring out paid ads, all that good fun stuff. As of now, as of today, we have a team where we have one writer, one researcher, as well as we have one media buyer, so paid ads guy. Mm-hmm. Openly speaking, like even our paid ads, we only focus on Meta. Right. Okay, we've just found that Meta ads is the best like performing ad like platform. Like Twitter doesn't really work. LinkedIn, I'm not even going to touch because I imagine it's expensive. Yeah. Reddit, you immediately get yelled at. So like, it's just like, let's stick with Meta and just keep scaling. And we've just been able to figure out pretty healthy CPAs. So like our CPA, our acquisition cost is around $1.50 and $2, which for a professional really audience of this, yeah, it's like really insane. Like the guy that I'm working with is like next level. He's doing awesome.
Damn. That's really impressive. How much time are you spending? Like what is your work week? 40 hours, 60 hours, 30 hours?
So right now with Cornerstone, so like with the other like consulting and Cornerstone, so like all in is probably like 60 hours when it comes to the bottleneck newsletter itself. It's around, let's say like 25 to 30 hours. Just because I have that team now. Like if I didn't have the team, it would just be 60 hours of me like writing, curating, commenting, distributing.
So I do want to talk about like how these three businesses relate, because it sounds like it's kind of the same, kind of different. It's like a flywheel, whatever you want to call it. In your mind, like which one is one of them, like the leader, is one of them your priority? How do you think about these three things together?
For sure. So I wrote about this a little bit in my 1 year review. Yeah. Like how I'm thinking of it is almost like it's a venture studio, right? So or a product studio, where it's the idea that I am going to keep gathering as many folks into the bottleneck as possible with hopefully high engagement. People are really enjoying what they're reading. I learn about their pain points, their struggles, what they might want or need, what they might want to spend money on, you know? And then provide those products or services or partner with other people who could do that.
Yeah.
So Cornerstone was like the first product that came up because a lot of these operators are not only lonely at the top, but they're actually not able to commiserate with like the other members on their team as well.
Yeah.
Right. CEOs are usually second in commands where they have to somehow manage up and they have to manage down. And if they ever show weakness, they're screwed. So that community has been like something interesting to solve, but also there are so many other pain points, right? Whether you think through like software tools, different type of agencies, maybe it's around automation, hiring. I mean, there's like a plethora of things that we could go through, but like, at least for me, it's like, okay, I have like the base level.
Yeah.
Now let me think through these offshoots of like, where could we go next? And that's kind of what I was mentioning earlier about the good and bad. I'm a startup guy. So like, I'm always used to like ship fast, go fast, keep going, keep going, keep going, which has led to some interesting like successes and failures so far in the past year.
Yeah. So, I listened to your episode you were on a month ago, the 5 Q's podcast, and you were talking about how you're like currently trying to figure out how to go from content to SaaS or data information product. You're working on this content to commerce pipeline. That's kind of what you're talking about here. You also said, I think in the 1 year thing, the 1 year post, that you've had 7 major experiments and that 5 have been failures and only 2 have been successes. And I'm imagining that those experiments are kind of about like that Cornerstone is probably one of the successes. And those experiments are all about trying to like productize or, you know, build another business on top of the platform that is the bottleneck. Can you go into some of those like failed experiments?
Yeah. So giving you like a rough timeline, I launched in like October, right? So from that time within a year, I launched a series of micro SaaS tools, and I can even send you like like list. What the idea or concept was, hey, audience, like if you pay like a very low subscription of like $10 a month, the idea here was like I was going to get like so many people to subscribe, and then we were going to hire out like an engineer who was going to be my buddy, so he's going to give me a discounted price. And then we were going to ask him to create like a series of micro SaaS tools to like help like optimize people's workflows
for like little
tasks. Exactly. Cool. But already that like is so convoluted, like that process of like, okay, like how are you going to like vote? Not only how are you going to convince people like this is a good idea, how are you going to get people to vote on this idea? How are you going to make sure this person delivers on time?
It's like, too trickle down.
It's too trickle down. It was too insane. But I was like, okay, let me try that. Right. And that was like one thing that like, we actually ended up launching 2 tools and like people were using it, but I was like, it's just, this is not like the route I want to go forward. So another thing was like, I was like, okay, let me go way easier. Let me launch like a digital, like digital products, like a bundle, right? So like Notion templates, like something very simple. After doing that for like a month, I was like, this is dumb. Like maybe like other people this is great, but like, this is like, I personally probably would not be paying like a lot of money for this. Like I would pay like $10.
And if you're not paying for it, why are you doing it?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if I wouldn't pay for this thing, like I said, if it's a very low amount, like $10, but like how many people are you going to have where it's like worthwhile, especially like if you have relatively high revenue goals, right? So like just 2 other things super quickly. It's like, this is something that eventually became Cornerstone, but like I had a Discord community, right? Where like, okay, let me do like a very lightweight paid community. And then I realized like, oh wait, like I made a mistake here because I have this executive audience and people who are already signing up. They're paying $7 a month for this. Like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
This should be like way higher of a price. So like that was killed in order to create like the next thing. Uh-huh. So like that was like a learning that eventually worked.
Yeah.
And then I had 2 other service agencies that like I played around with. I pitched to a few people. It was around like this idea of like automations or like operation consulting. Or like fractional COO, if you will.
Yeah.
That was also like one of those things where I consider them failures because like those could have been like consistent, successful businesses. You can kind of lump them up with, I wouldn't lump them up with consulting. Consulting were like, hey, this is how you do the thing versus like these agencies would be like, we'll just do it for you.
Yeah.
Right. So like maybe there's a world where I revisit that, but like at least in the moment, I was like, I'm doing too much.
Yeah. Well, so yeah. I want to talk about the Discord to Cornerstone thing really quickly. It makes me think of like, you know, Planet Fitness's business model works, where you pay $20 a month and they're just way oversubscribed because then nobody goes. I've been paying for a Planet Fitness subscription for a couple of years. Last time I went was like a year ago. But then there's, you know, like Equinox, and it's like $300 a month or whatever. And the idea being that then people will go because it's more expensive, all that kind of thing. But yeah, with the Discord thing, I think, you know, community is an overused word. Brands and creators both are always wanting to, like, let's start a Slack or a Discord or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I'd love to, as it were, double click on that kind of how long the Discord lasted and then like shutting it down, like that transition into Cornerstone. And then maybe you can tell me a little bit more about Cornerstone itself.
We launched like that Discord channel, or like that super small paid membership in February. We launched Cornerstone in June. So like within 4 months, I just realized pretty quickly that like, hey, like people are interested in this like thing. Yeah. Let me see like what else is out there. Realize pretty quickly, just based from my own experiences in communities or memberships, as well as what it looks like to do something best in class, which is like always what you want to go after. I realized I not only was undervaluing the audience I was going after, but also I think the value I potentially could have been providing to people would be way higher if I was charging more. Yeah. Right. There's only so much you can do if you're charging $10 a month for your audience versus like if you're charging a significantly like higher amount. You now, of course, like have vetted away people who might not be able to join that membership, but you're going to be able to provide way more of an offering. So with Cornerstone, like how it's structured now is we have three main pillars. Yeah. One is around the idea of like core groups. It's very similar to YPO, just to be quite frank with you. So we have core groups, right? So like your place with eight members. Around the same attraction size, industry, as well as just like similar problems that you may be facing, right? Because COOs are so vague in nature, kind of just have to place people a little bit like in the same like vibe similar problem vibes that they're always facing. Yeah. Of course, there's a digital community as well. And then the last piece here is that we do workshops, right? So we plan to have like a workshop every month where people can kind of go in with an expert on like how to do X, Y, or Z, right? So like, hey, like I just got sued. What do I do? Okay, cool. you'd be surprised how many times.
That was a quote, to be clear. You didn't.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. It's like, oh no, I have to deal with this situation I've never thought of before. Or like, hey, like how do I set up my sales tax? And like, I know it's not the most exciting or sexy thing, but it's things that just need to be done that people need to figure out. And because there's so much content out there in the world where you can't trust the quality. It's like, okay, let me go hire that expert that probably I'd be paying thousands of dollars to do it. But if you're part of Cornerstone, it's just like part of the package.
Yeah, you're just peers and you just trade ideas. One question about audience size and like the limits of the bottleneck. Do you have like an estimation of what you think the ceiling is for like how big that subscriber list can get?
For sure. So great question. Something I was worried about for a while. So what I found is two things. One is when I was writing, especially in the earlier days, I was going after like COOs and operation executives, but I noticed that there was like a little trickle in of folks coming in who were more like the middle management, right? And the middle management were business operation managers, program managers, right? But like senior program managers, people who are like aspirationally wanting to become a COO, right? So when you start really expand, when you start thinking through the idea of who is a biz ops individual or who wants to be a COO, like, of course, that like becomes way bigger. Yeah. And I think what's going to eventually happen with the bottleneck is, like I do think it's capped, but I think like we're not close at all. It's going to be in a couple hundreds of thousands of people, I think, is like where we could go. The reason why I say that's for two reasons. One is... Yeah. There's an existing subreddit right now. I think it has like 160,000 people just for project management, right? Or program management, right? And that's a subreddit like already exists. Like it's already proven demand there. If you go on LinkedIn Sales Navigator, how many like senior operational like people are there? I think it's about like 5 million, right? 6 million. So there's actually more like ops folks than there are product managers, right? In the world. So like there's definitely like a lot of demand. And then because of like how we write the content, which is very like much specialized in a way where we say like, hey, we're writing about HR or finance or this or that or this. Most people might come for one area, but they might read all the other areas to upgrade their own abilities, right?
Yeah.
So like we're getting this it's interesting where like the first couple tens of thousands of people probably are going to be these CEOs, BizOps folks, but it's slowly over time, either through word of mouth, paid marketing, or organic, more and more generalists are going to come in who want to read the bottleneck to get their business from not necessarily 0 to 1, but from like 1 to 10 or 10 to 100.
Yeah, that's ambitious. Is it like, do you have dreams of like bringing in like another writer and like you're an everyday newsletter and like the way that the content itself evolves? Do you have specific dreams or goals, or is it kind of just like you're in the sweet spot?
I'm in the sweet spot, baby. Yeah. We're just gonna keep figuring it out day to day, man. Like it's one of those things where I think the venture studio model just works really well for me, right? It's because like I don't experiment too much with the bottleneck. You know, like let me keep growing the bottleneck, keep putting out creative and hopefully solid content. Yeah, exactly. It pays the bills.
Yeah.
But then like, where are my moonshots? Oh, okay. It's just like this constellation around the bottleneck. Now I not only get to scratch the itch of like, hey, I want to go do like weird, crazy stuff over here. And like, let's just see if it works. And if it doesn't, okay. I mean, like I tried my best and I'm just going to keep trying while I didn't touch the baby.
Yeah.
I have two babies, I guess. The bottleneck and then my actual baby. So I don't touch the bottleneck.
Yeah. Yeah. You're cradling your real baby though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if this is a question you can answer, given that like the way that the bottleneck is so steady and then you want to take these moonshots that are more experimental, but like let's say absolute dream scenario, what is the bottleneck, or what is also the bottleneck and the constellation around it in 1 year and then in 3 years?
Great question. So I think in 1 year the bottleneck, let's just say like the bottleneck constellation, right? Like for lack of a better word, or studio, maybe bottlenecks. I'll work on a better word and then get
the bottling plant.
Yeah, they're perfect. The bottling plant. The bottling plant. So like the purpose of like the bottleneck and how I like to think about it, even with 1 year, 3 year, so is like we want to help early stage biz ops professionals get better at work, right? We want to help them get from earlier stage to maybe even middle stage, right, of like their businesses, and hopefully their careers. So the way I think about it, at least within the first year, is hopefully we'll have launched some sort of like course or on-demand product where people are either able to learn about how to set up departments or structuring to make sure they take themselves out of the weeds of like their work, right? Because what we're finding is with the bottleneck, they're a little bit earlier stage than who would qualify for Cornerstone, right? So what we're finding is like anyone who would have qualified for Cornerstone probably already signed up and is part of the community. So now what we need to do at the bottleneck is like get people upgraded and like get them to the next level where they then qualify for Cornerstone.
Yeah.
So now it's like if you go 3 year plan to 1 year plan, 3 year plan actually is like people read the Cornerstone, have developed their career enough where, or the business enough where they now qualify for Cornerstone, and there's like that seamless transition, right, where they can apply. Mm-hmm. With the next year, we have to be able to bridge that gap where like, hey, you're a little bit earlier stage. What can we provide from a product or service point of view for you then to get to this end stage, which is, of course, people are still learning, figuring things out. So like at least owning that value chain, I think is like super interesting for me and always top of mind whenever I'm thinking about like building out the next thing.
That's smart. I like that. Maybe just one more line of questioning. We talked a little bit about social media. You use Meta to advertise. Your LinkedIn now is like 3,500. Your Twitter is like 2,700. Both of those have grown since you started. And then I'm thinking about this in the sense of like you as creator, because then there's also the one other kind of place I found you being like a creator is there's this podcast you've been co-hosting for the past couple of months with this guy, Andrew Ray, founder of another company called TaxWire, which is actually how I found you, because the first guest was Beehive COO Priya Goenka. I don't think you hosted a podcast before, and I think this is kind of the most explicitly like you as creator thing. So a lot of things in there, but I guess the question is like, do you have ambitions to like put Ramil as a brand more out there, or is your thought more to actually even go back and, you know, because at the very beginning of this, I forget if it was before we started recording, you said that like, you know, the CEO is in the back room. You're not used to doing this thing. So a lot there, but I guess the question is like, do you want to continue being more front of house, or do you want to go a little bit more back of house as this grows?
So there's always like two fights in my head, right? Where I think for the bottleneck to succeed, I have to put myself more and more out there, yeah. right? It doesn't necessarily need to be like Ramil's podcast, Ramil's newsletter, Ramil's like whatever.
Ramil. Yeah,
exactly. Like I would hate that. Like, but I think in a world where you're mentioning creator or like individual led, like products, services, like that just seems to be working in the name of the game right now. Yeah. Right. Like a perfect example is like with Airbnb, whenever they post anything on socials, it's not Airbnb posting it and going off Chesky. And like going exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So like, obviously very crazy comparison, but it's just like one of those things where like, I think I need to put myself more out there and become more recognizable and someone associated with like COOs or biz ops for like me to achieve any of those like goals that I potentially have. Like I was mentioning with the 3-year, 1-year plan, but in my brain, I'm also having to fight like, no, but don't go in the front, like stay in the back and like get someone else to be pushing the front.
Yeah.
And then obviously I just know that like there's the logical of my brain, which was like describing like, hey, I need to be in the front versus the emotional side. Like, no, dude, you're a back office guy. Like stay back office and like, don't be on video. Don't be on audio. Like just stay, even writing is pushing in. Like you've done good there. Like you need to fight this. Like maybe it's imposter syndrome. I don't know what it is. But it's always those battles in my head that I'm trying to like figure out.
Yeah. Well, it's imposter syndrome. Maybe it's like that. It's what it is. It's making yourself vulnerable and it's exposing yourself. And it's like, it's taking a risk on your own person, right? Like that's kind of what it is. I think, I don't know, maybe one thing you could do is like you find some like super TikTok savvy like business school grad and then they become the front of house and then you get another one and it's this whole media company and it's Bottleneck Brew, whatever. The bottling plant. I really like the bottling plant. You know, that's free. You could take
that. That was so good. I might do a little rebrand. Like something you just mentioned that like popped in my head is like, I think Morning Brew did a really good job about this. Like, what's the guy's name? Dan Toomey. Didn't realize he worked for Morning Brew.
Yeah.
Dude, he's so good. Fantastic. And like, it's not like Alex Lieberman or Austin Reef are like the ones in front, like advertising Morning Brew too much. It's more of like, at least from a video or audio point of view, like Dan Toomey, I think in my head, at least is like the front guy and he's doing that. And like, maybe I could do that, but, I struggle to think about what would it look like to build audio or video content for like back office work. Cause even that, and like in the nature of the work, it's like not the most exciting thing, but I guess you could have said the same thing before Dan Toomey came in. So like, there has to be something there.
Gotta find the right person. Well, all right. I think we will end it there. You can go, listener, you can go find Ramil's work at thebottleneck.io. Is there anything else you want to plug?
Would love for you guys to check out Cornerstone. So join cornerstone.co as well if you just want to see what we're doing there. And if you ever just want to email me, hopefully it's been pretty clear. Like I just am always willing to jump on calls or just chat with people. So Ramil@thebottleneck.io. Feel free to hit me up.
Well, Ramil, thank you for coming on. And this has been the Creator Spotlight Podcast. Listener, I will see you next week.